All right, welcome to Christian Overcomers, and thank you for joining us for this Bible study. Revelation 13M, 666, Magic Square of the Sun, Part 2. You know, in Part 1, we looked at some very interesting number patterns in this so-called Magic Square of the Sun. And today we're going to do a little bit more of that. We're actually going to see some patterns that possibly illustrate the sun's movement between the solstices and the equinox, as well as its movement through the 12 signs of the zodiac. But before we get into that, let's take a look back at Revelation 13, verse 18. And it reads, "Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count," or calculate, "the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 600, 666, or 666. You know, many people understand that the number of the Antichrist is 666. It's not a big secret. Even Hollywood, you could see it in their all over their movies. They've picked up on this as well. But what most people haven't tried to do is to understand what 666 means. Why does the beast use this number? What is significant about it? What are its factors? Those are some questions we need to ask ourselves. And that is what I believe God meant when he said, whoever hath understanding to count or to factor out this number, understand its meaning. For it is the number of the beast, the number of the Antichrist. And that's what this series is going to be about, is understanding the meaning of 666 and its factors as best as we can. And what's really fascinating about this is what we began finding out in part one is that 666 is an astronomical number. It has something to do with the various movements and alignments of the sun. Thus, it's called the magic square of the sun, this device with the numbers on it. More correctly stated, probably the solar seal. All right, let's move on. And we're going to just review a little bit about what we went over in part one. We found out that it's even stamped right here on the back of these pagan amulets, the magic square of the sun, or the solar seal. And the number 666 is down here, as you can see. And what I didn't read this from part one, but what I'm going to do is, because somebody who hasn't done part one might be thinking, well, why are we looking at this pagan amulet? What does this have anything to do with the Bible? Well, as we found out in part one, and as we're going to see here throughout this study, you can find this on page 225 to 226 of the Computation of 666. And the author states here that the amulet is not in its design any mere device of man or demon. Now, in its design, now pagans have taken this and have tried to worship demons with it, and who knows what else. But the amulet is not in its design any mere device of man or demon, being simply one of a series of magic squares, but is most likely an actual transcript of physical forces, that is, of the laws of gravitation, as illustrated by the sun's circuit through the heavens. So this device here that we're looking at here, this number pattern in the formation of a square, gives us scientific information. Very profound scientific information, even without the use of modern technology, even. just by looking at the relationship of these numbers, it'll give us precise movements of various heavenly bodies, namely the sun. Anyway, so this is a 6x6 square. You got six columns here, and then you got six boxes this way and six boxes that way. 6x6 equals 36 cells in there. And these are slides that we already went over. I'm just going to go through these ones really fast. The sum, what we found out was the sum of the numbers 1 through 36 that were plugged in here, not in random order, though it may look like it, but in a very precise order. But they equal, or the sum of numbers 1 through 36 by themselves equal 666. In other words, if you take 1 plus 2 plus 3 all the way up to 36, you get 666. All right. So why 36? Why is 36 used in this square called the magic square? I'll just refer to it as the magic square. Those of you who know that we're not into magic, we don't talk about magic. They call it magic square because these numbers within this square do some very profound things, scientific things. That's why people call it magic, because it's the numbers appear to just do some crazy things, as you've seen in part one. You'll see more of them in this one. But anyways, there are 36 constellations in the heavens. And that's why there are 36 cells in that square, each one representing one of the 36 constellations. And if you understand that the sun, from our standpoint, governs all 36 of these constellations. It is the brightest object in the sky from the Earth's standpoint. We talked a little bit about how 36, when we get into numerics, if you add a zero onto it or you times it by 10, you get the 360, which is the number of degrees around a circle, and it's also the number of the perfect prophetic year, written about in the book of Daniel and Revelation, as well as the during the days of Noah. We talked about that, 360 degrees in a circle. And we also talked about how the pagans worshipped a sun god. All right? And again, that's not what we're looking at this for. You see, Satan is a copycat. He's a thief. He's a robber. Now, we know from various scriptures, and I think I got a slide coming up here really soon, is that the sun was a representation of Christ, of the Son of God. But Satan has always tried to steal that role as Messiah. All the way back, from the beginning of the book of Genesis, as well as into the first earth age, from Ezekiel chapter 28 and so forth. But anyway, so that's what Satan does. The sun itself represents this life-giving force. And that's what Christ is. But Satan had turned it around and used it to represent himself, his seed, and has even made it into an object of worship, an object of idolatry. And that's how that goes. And these are some pictures here, more pagan sun gods. And here's one that's really interesting. We went over this again, the Mayan serpent sun god. You see the cobra snake here, and here comes the man out of there surrounding the sun. All right, so we found out from Malachi 4:2, this is one of the verses I was talking about. We'll get to another one at the end of this study. It says, Malachi 4, verse 2, it says, "But unto you that fear my name shall the sun," now check this out, S-U-N, of righteousness arise with healing in his wings or his rays of light. And you shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall. So there it is. Christ is mentioned as the S-U-N of righteousness. The Son is a symbol of him. The Son is a symbol of him. But again, Satan, as the counterfeiter, has stolen this symbol, claimed it as his own, made it into an idol, even if you would, and so forth. But what is this? This is important when we're talking about counting the number of the beast. Because there are some connections here with these false sun gods and the beast of Revelation, the Antichrist. All right, so we want to pick up every little clue that we can when going through this. All right. So we looked at this, and what was really fascinating about this number square is that if you added up all these rows here this way, they equal exactly 111. Every one of them. And then if you add them up down this way, they equal 666. The same as if you add up all these vertical columns. They all add up to 111. Times 6, you add all these up, and you get 666 this way as well. Now, if you do the diagonal columns, they equal 111 and 111. And what's neat about this, and I didn't have it right there, but I think it's on the next slide. But this is really neat too. We overlaid this on top of the Great Pyramid of Giza in Egypt. And we found out that it seems to really fit on top of it. And I don't have, this picture doesn't show it too well, but you could see the cross that is formed by these two diagonal rows that equal 111. They do some other things as well. Those of you who, again, if you did part one, we went through a lot more detail on this. But anyways, it lines up right on top of that. And if you know anything about the Great Pyramid, there's a little bit of a line. Whoops. Let's see if I can get back there. There's a little bit of a line in there. And I think you can see it on this one a little bit. But anyways, there are two crosses that are formed in this square, this numerical square. And they fit, that makes this thing fit precisely on top. You know, if you were to put it to scale, precisely on top, as far as pattern-wise, of the Great Pyramid of Giza. And there are a lot of numerical connections to it as well that we're going to probably discover throughout this series here. All right. But if you take 666 and you add the cross to it, the cross, like the Christian cross, you get 888 because you get 111 plus 111. So you go from the beast to Christ. To Christ. Because the beast number, the number of his name, is 666. But the number of Jesus in the Greek, his numerical value adds up to 888. Pretty fascinating. Anyways, we took this even a little bit further. We found out, again, that there are two crosses here. One tilted to the side and one standing upright there. Both symbols of the cross that Christ was crucified on. And what was really neat about it is we saw that it looked very similar to the Union Jack flag of Great Britain. Now, the Union Jack, now Jack is just another name, another variation of the name Jacob. So you could say this was the Union Jacob flag of Great Britain. This flag came in use under Jacob the Sixth under James the Sixth. James, again, is even another variation of the name Jacob. In 1603, when the crowns of England, Scotland, and Ireland were united into one kingdom. And we're not going to go into that today because we already did that. If you add up the sum of the diagonal 11 rows, of course, you're going to get 666 there as well. And this was really neat. We saw this. If we take these two sides, put all the ones together, and multiply them against each other, you get this number line that goes up to 9 and back down to 1. And then we found out that the number 37, which is actually a number connected with photosynthesis as well as some other things that we're going to be talking about, different eclipse cycles, that is found in this square here. We find out there are other things like it goes up. These diagonal rows go up in intervals of 5 on this one, and then on intervals of 7 on this one. 1, 8, 15, 22, 29. So you can see these numbers just aren't, I mean, they're placed in here just perfectly. Just perfectly to do all these things. And we talked about Bonnie Gantt. She's she's one of the leading experts. She's passed on now, but she was one of the leading experts in biblical mathematics. And from page 24 of her book, she goes into she talks about the number 37. She says the integers 3 and 7 are very special numbers. They combine and intertwine in the gematria of the Bible in its descriptions of creation. Even a brief surface study of creation reveals these two amazing numbers. And the more in depth we proceed, the more profound they become. They are figurate numbers, i.e. they form shapes. The number 3 is the first triangular number, and so on. We went over that. All right. We also found that the number 37, or these two integers, 3 and 7, used both ways, is found within the first verse of Genesis. And it's also, 3 and 7 are also part of the gematria value of the Logos, or the Word of God, as well as the word wisdom in the Hebrew, chokmah. And we talked about this, Jesus and Greek gematria equals 888. And we got 37 times 24. And Christ is the number 1480. And its value is 1480. And that's 37 times 40. So we see 37 there. This is one we went over, but I forgot to elaborate a little bit on it. We see the sum of the perimeter. If you add up all these perimeter numbers here, they equal 370. Now, why is that significant? Well, first off, you got the numbers 3 and 7 there again, if you drop the 0, or 37. But there's something else that's really, really, really important. Noah was on the ark, and you'll find out that many of these numbers, if not all of them, in one way or the other, are connected to Noah while he was on the ark. And that's what the author of the computation of 666 went through great pains to document. Anyways, Noah was on the ark for 370 days. And here we see it here in this perimeter of this square. Fascinating. Fascinating. All right. Okay. We found out some other neat things here. If you add up the corners of all these different squares, starting from the outside, going all the way to the middle, they all equal 74. I mean, if this doesn't intrigue you, if you're somebody of that likes to get into science and astronomy and numerics and creation, this stuff is really, this stuff's just fascinating. All right. We're going to move on now to some new stuff that we haven't covered yet. Just thought we should review that a little bit to get our bearings. Anyways, we're going to start this out on page 226 of the Computation of 666. And we're going to probably be drawing pretty heavily from this book in our upcoming studies in this series on 666. But anyways, we'll get reading. He says, let the reader construct a board divided into 36 squares with the numbers placed in the same order as in the amulet. Then write on 36 small scraps of paper the numbers 1, 2, 3, and etc. up to 36. Now beginning at number 1, proceed to place all the 36 scraps of paper on the board, one by one, up to number 36, on the corresponding squares to those appropriated to each such number on the amulet, and in doing so, watch the rows they occupy, first horizontally and then vertically. Horizontally, the following phenomena will be seen to develop themselves in, now check this out, in strict accord with the sun's passage from the solstice, the extremities of the amulet, towards the equinox, the center of the amulet, and vice versa, as explained in the first diagram in this chapter. Page 226, Computation of 666. All right, we're going to do that. So basically what he said is, hey, make this number square and start placing the numbers in chronological order and watch the pattern develop. So that's what we did here. We marked the solstice. You could say this is possibly the northern solstice. It should be summer for us up north. And this would be the winter solstice. And here's the equinox. Okay. We'll start with number one. So we place number one there. And I got it highlighted in yellow. And I'll just go with it like that. Number two. Number three. You see how these numbers are, they're starting out here on the edges near the solstices. All right. Keeps doing that. Five. Did I have a backwards one there? Let me check that out. No, we went from 4 to 5 to 6. There we go. First six numbers. You see how they occupy these two farthest rows? Let's see what happens when we add the next six. All right, we got 7 up there. Now we got 8. There we got 9. See, it's occupying the next row. 10, 11, 12. All right, that was the next six numbers. They occupy these rows here, moving towards the center. We got 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. And we'll stop at 18. You see how that was the next three numbers. Next six numbers, I'm sorry. Right in the middle, surrounding the equinox there. All right. Page 226 from the Computation of 666. At this point, the reader will have arrived at the number 18 and performed half his work. He will remember that it is always 18 signs that are visible at a time, 18 signs of the of 18 constellations, and that the 36 signs or constellations are cut in twain, cut in half by the equinoctial line or equator, which is the center of the sphere. He too has arrived at the equinox or the balance. And as he is illustrating the movements of the sun, he will find by continuing the process that he must now return to the solstice or extremities of the amulet, hence beginning at the number 19. Again, six numbers are placed in the two central rows, and he's got them labeled there, II and JJ. The following six occur in the two intermediate rows, HH and KK, and the process is completed by placing the final six in the two extreme rows, GG and LL. I'll show you what that means. So go to 19 here. Now we start in the middle, go 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. All those numbers again, now they're building back outwards from the near the equinox there. All right, so we go 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, and 30. And we keep moving out. 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, all the way back out. Pretty fascinating that we see this, all within this square. All right, he says, next, let him take all the papers off the board and begin again, watching the phenomena of the vertical rows, and he will see that the amulet is also a representation of the process by which, in the sun's passage through six of the signs of the zodiac, or central region, one is regarded as doubled, and at the same time another one is omitted, thus rendering it possible. So what he's saying now is that, so there are 36 constellations. In the sky, the star map, if that's what you want to call it. But the sun actually travels through this circle, this imaginary circle, I think it's called the ecliptic. And many of you are aware of it. It passes through each of the 12 signs of the zodiac. And those are the major signs. And you could say the 36 constellations are maybe the minor signs. All right, so watch the vertical pattern as we go here now. Vertical, I mean by looking at the columns. Be the same numbers, but we're just watching it from a different standpoint. All right, you see one fills this column. Two fills this column. Three fills that column. Four. See, they're not landing in the same column. They're all separate. Five and six. Okay? So each column is filled with one of these first six numbers. Excuse me. Number seven. Number eight. Number nine. Number 10, again, all different columns. Number 11, this column's filled with an orange number, this one. Oh, I didn't do this one, okay, and 12. All of them are filled, none are doubled up. We go to 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, oh, what just happened there? 18. It was supposed to go over here, right? Well, something changed. And that's very strange. See, now we got doubled up here. We got 18 did not follow the normal pattern of filling the rows. Why is that? Well, we'll talk about that here in a little bit, a possible explanation for that. And then we go to 19 to fill that column. And then right away again, we got two in one column. And I was supposed to have a square around that, but so we got 19 all of a sudden. Something happens there as well. Now I'm going to read this from page 227 of the computation of 666. The first six numbers placed occupy respectively a square in each of the six rows. And again, he's got them labeled. I didn't have them labeled. Excuse me. I had to get a drink of water there. All right, I'm going to start this over here. It says the first six numbers placed occupy respectively a square in each of the six rows. The next six numbers do the same. At the third six, there is a change, and that change occurs at the number 18. The point whereby, now remember, 18 is actually 6 plus 6 plus 6. 666 if you do the process of addition. The point where we observe a change in the former process. And I have already explained that four of the great cycles of time. Now pay attention. Four of the great cycles of time. Visually, the primary eclipse cycle. The nutation cycle. The revolution of the moon's nodes. I believe that's what you—that's how you pronounce that. Nodes, and the metonic cycle. Now check this out. All occupy a period of between 18 and 19 years. That's fascinating. That just cannot be an accident. So again, what we're looking at here is a sort of a calendar. A calendar. Not just the yearly cycles of the sun, but longer cycles. This change is what the number 18, instead of being inserted in the row AA, where it should be, where it would have been expected, as following the precedent of the first two sixes, is placed in the row EE, which has already been occupied by the number 13. So that this time he has omitted one in the row and doubled and so forth. And you saw the illustration of that. But talk a little bit about the eclipse cycles. We're not going to get in depth on them today. But I think we're going to probably try to go into these things a little bit more. The eclipse, especially the eclipse cycles. Because these are part of our calendar that many people totally ignore. We look at moons for months. We look at the sun for solar years, and a lot of people balance them out by what's called a metonic cycle, or every 19 years, the lunar months and the solar years line back up with each other. But this eclipse cycle, we're going to talk about it. This is another factor of time. Now check this out. Genesis 1 verse 14. And God said, "Let there be lights, stars, heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon. Let there be lights in the firmament of heaven to divide the day from the night." Okay, we do that, days. "And let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years." So what these other time periods represent our different seasons. Periods of time. All right, so watch the, so we're on the vertical pattern there. We got 19, 18 and 19 is the number of these other patterns of time. And we just keep building out, and you see that they go back to fill in the rows according to the normal pattern. Again, with the exception of 19, 18 and 19, they were switched around to make this happen. All right. So we're going to go into some scriptures because we're talking about, this movement of the sun through the heavens. Why should we be interested in this? Again, the pagans knew about it. They had this information. They got it from somewhere. But should we be interested in this, this numerical square? Well, Psalms 19 verse 1 says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork." Think about that for a minute. The heavens, when you look up at them, they declare God's glory. Now, not just looking at up at them to just appreciate them, because the deeper student will look at them and understand the various movements for the signs and for the seasons and have a greater appreciation of them, to see the hand of God in action, in creation, in his divine plan, even when it comes to time. "And the firmament showeth his handiwork." Now check this out. "Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge." What does? What does the heavens do? The heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, the stars. Now, we're not talking about pagan astrology here. I'm not talking about going to finding your horoscope and seeing what your destiny is for this month or this day. We're talking about God's plan written in the heavens. And it actually, when these things, when these revolutions of time go through their cycles, they utter a speech. They give information. Verse 3, "There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard, because they're there. You can't change them. You could see them besides light pollution. All you got to do is go outside and look up. And they speak to us. Their line is gone out through all the earth. And their words, there it is again, their words to the end of the world." Now here is one of the main reasons we came here. "In them," in what? "The heavens, hath he set a tabernacle for the sun." Is that not what we've been looking at? With that so-called magic square? Or the square of the sun? Is that not what we've been seeing that represents? A tabernacle where the sun travels through? Verse 5, "which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoiceth as a strong man to run a race." What is he talking about here? The sun is the bridegroom, because the sun represents Christ. Though the Antichrist would like it to represent him as the false bridegroom. So you see, that's where you have to be able to differentiate. Because many people would look at anything to do with the sun now because of pagan sun worship. They'd see anything that's connected to it. Oh, the pagan sun worshipers, they used a cross. Therefore, the Christian cross is pagan. That's nonsense. See, a little bit of knowledge can get people into a lot of confusion, can get them to spread a lot of disinformation or misinformation. So the sun comes out like a bridegroom out of his chamber, and he rejoiceth as a strong man to run a race. So picture all those different numbers that we were going through. That possibly represents the race of the bridegroom. Going from house to house. Verse 6, his going forth is from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the ends of it, all 36 constellations, as well as the 12 signs of the zodiac, and there is nothing hid from the heat thereof. All right, hey, that was a fascinating, some fascinating scriptures. So what does that tell us? It tells us that the heaven is the tabernacle for the sun. All the different signs of the zodiac, all the different constellations. And I believe that's what we see represented here that has been stolen by pagans and paganism. This numerical sequence, probably the sequence by which the sun moves through the tabernacle. All right. So, I got this from page 181 of the Companion Bible. We know from the book of Hebrews that the earthly sanctuary or the earthly tabernacle was to be made after the pattern of the heavenly. Well, what is the heavenly tabernacle? As far as in one respect, I guess I could say, well, the different signs of the zodiac, as well as the constellations, the 36 constellations. So he has up here, he's got each tribe assigned to one of the 12 signs of the zodiac. And here he's actually got Ephraim and Manasseh both assigned to the same one. So we're not going to go into that today, but this is just how he has it. He got Asher, Sagittarius, Dan, Scorpio, Naphtali, Capricornus, Issachar, Cancer, Judah, Leo, and all around the circle there. Now, if you look at Israel and its encampment, just picture the tabernacle being here, and the tribes on the west over here, the tribes on the north over there, east and south. And you can see that there. One other thing I was going to mention. There is a verse, and we're going to get to it when we get to the last chapters of Revelation. It talks about New Jerusalem. Now, New Jerusalem is also, the base of it is also a square. Now, it's debatable whether or not it's a cube or if it's a pyramid. Now, just look at this from a three-dimensional standpoint, and you can see here this square elevates up to a pyramid with this cross here. Again, like looking down upon the Great Pyramid from the top, and this is what you would see. I tend to believe that it's going to be a pyramid, just because it seems to fit most of the analogies of the mountain of the Lord and so forth. The pyramid is a type of a mountain and so on. But hey, that's not important right now. What we do know for sure is that its base is a square. So could this square that the pagans have stolen and tried to use as their own, could this square represent New Jerusalem itself that comes down out of heaven? That's not going to need any light of the sun because the Lord Jesus Christ, or the God and the Lamb, are the light thereof. It's something to think about. It's something to think about. All right, let's see where, let's go to Genesis 37, since we're talking about, you know, because we're thinking a lot about heavenly things as we get into some of these numerics and things like that. But should we be doing that? Well, Genesis 37, verse 9. And he, Joseph, dreamed yet another dream. And he told it his brethren, and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. So he's talking about heavenly bodies here. The sun, the moon, 11 stars, the 11 other signs of the zodiac. Now the interpretation of this particular dream was that his mother and father, represented by the sun and the moon, his mother and father are represented by the sun, by the sun and the moon, and the 11 stars, or the 11 other signs of the zodiac, were represented his brothers. And this dream was a dream that said that Joseph would be above them all. That one day his whole family would come bowing down to him. And of course that happened when God moved Joseph to Egypt and put him up into next in command underneath Pharaoh. And that happened there. But we see there the other signs of the zodiac are mentioned as the other tribes. And he told his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come down to bow ourselves to thee, to the earth? And yes, they did. So I guess that leads us to the end of this this study here. I hope to, in our next study, if the Lord keeps us on the plan that I'm thinking we're going to go, is we're going to maybe get into the eclipse cycles, the saris, they're called, that factor out to 666 years, and there's a lot of other different factors involved with that as well. And we're going to find out also, we might get into this, 666 is a number often given to the pagan sun god that has gone by different names. And well, we talked about this, at 666 is a solar number because it has to do with the movement of the sun. And many other things. Hey, this is just, again, I don't know how many studies we're going to do on this. I don't know if we're going to make it all the way to Z, Revelation 13Z. But I feel led to do as many studies as it takes to understand this, because for me personally, it's opened up a lot of depth and understanding in God's plan, going all the way back to Genesis, all the way to the end of Revelation. Just by spending some time and focusing in on trying to calculate, factor out this equation that God gave us in Revelation 13, verse 18. And I sometimes smile as I'm going through it, because it's just like God to do something like this, where he leads us a little clue, knowing that most people would gloss over, but knowing that somebody else would stop and say, hey, what is this? And why does it seem so important for God to say that it requires a great deal of wisdom, and he actually put it in the form of a challenge to try to figure it out? Well, because I do think he expects the wise in the end to try to decipher some of these things, because he's got many different treasures in his word awaiting us. He wants to share them with us, but he needs us to get on that higher level of thinking. Now, I'm not promoting that we're just going to, you know, that we should just rely on our intellect for everything and ignore faith and love and the commandments of God and become a bunch of scribes and Pharisees and a bunch of hypocrites who say, we are the learned elders and the rest of you are ignorant sheep. No, that's not what I'm saying. But it is true that the more knowledge and wisdom we have, the deeper relationship, the deeper and more meaningful our relationship becomes with Almighty God, our Heavenly Father. And He expects us to do that. And I've mentioned it before in many different studies, the time when Christ came to Nicodemus, who was supposed to be a master of Israel. And he was talking to him about being born again, about the corn falling into the ground and how it had to die before it came back to life. And he said to Nicodemus, he said, hey, if you can't understand what I'm talking about here, and this is sort of an earthly thing or something on a little bit of a lower level, he says, you being a master of Israel, you're supposed to be a teacher of Israel, and you don't understand this base concept about the, I think it was about the corn falling into the ground and the new birth, the new life, being born again. And he said, if you don't understand this thing, how am I going to tell you of heavenly things? Think about that for a minute. That means he was nudging Nicodemus. He's saying, Nicodemus, put your thinking cap on. You're supposed to know some of these deeper things. But you either haven't been taking the time to study them, or somebody else has come along and tried to cloud over these issues and tried to hide the keys of knowledge. All right, hey, I cannot wait. Every one of these, I cannot wait to get into. I get so excited to do these. But anyways, do like what Christ said when he was tempted of the devil in Matthew chapter 4. He said, man shall not live by bread alone, not by just physical food, but by every word of God. So see that you study it every single day. Digest it. Meditate upon it. Think about it. And rethink about it. All the time. Again, every single day, so that you can be a Christian overcomer. Christian Overcomers is brought to you by the tithes and offerings of our listeners. If you'd like to donate, you can do so by going to ChristianOvercomers.com. God bless you, and thank you for your support.